Hey, folks. Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. So the idea behind the podcast is simple. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Ben, come on, honey. Get up, get up, get up.
You do your best to raise the children.
Anna, you forgot to wash my shirt. I told you 100 times today is purple shirt day at school.
You do your best to care for them.
Come on, Ben!
But no matter how much you love them...
Come on, Ben, please.
You'll never measure up...
Mommy!
...to their mother.
I think I can handle it from here, Isabel.
From the director of Mrs. Doubtfire and the Academy Award-winning producer of Forrest Gump...
You didn't ask me if I wanted a new mother. You didn't even ask me if I liked her.
...comes a story...
I never wanted to be a mom. And believe it or not, I am trying.
About the tears that are inevitable.
People make mistakes.
Anna, you do not run out on your mother.
No, that's your job.
And the joy that is possible.
And your whole life's happiness is wrapped up in you. You know every story, every wound.
You'll learn.
When two women share one family. Oh, baby.
Fifty percent of children in the United States will have a step-parent at some point in their lifetime. 14 million of those will be step-moms. So scenarios like the one you just heard are becoming commonplace. 90% of children in step-families live with a step-dad. Yet despite these startling statistics, most people can't name one book, workshop, or program dedicated to helping step-dads or step-moms raise their step-children. Enter my guest today, Ron Deal. Ron is founder and president of As For Me and My House Ministries and provides marriage and family training and family ministry consultation to church leaders. For more information on Ron, visit smartstepfamilies.com. Ron is author of the Step Family Resource Library, including the Amazon.com best-selling books, The Smart Stepmom, co-authored with Laura Petherbridge, The Remarriage Checkup, co-authored with Dr. David Olson, and The Smart Stepdad. A recognized expert in marriage and blended families, Ron is a member of the Step Family Expert Council for the National Step Family Resource Center. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist with nearly 25 years' experience in local church ministry and family ministry consulting. Ron, welcome to Heartline.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be on your program.
You wrote a series of books on step parents because you obviously saw a problem. Can you talk about that? What motivated you to write about this topic now?
Well, a number of years ago, I was trained as a marriage and family therapist. And, of course, if you're going to do family therapy, you're going to work with lots of different family situations. And I found myself really interested and intrigued in working with stepfamilies. And I was also working as a full-time family minister for churches in different parts of the country over the years. And I was always wondering, how do we do prevention and education with all types of families, all types of couples, parenting situations? And so I just launched into doing some teaching and educating, creating a support group in a church I was working for at the time. It's now 15 years ago that we started working with blended families. And pretty quickly, over the period of 2 or 3 years, it became apparent to me that there was a great need within the church and within communities around the country and just consulting with different family organizations. And so I found myself just spending a lot of time and energy in teaching and writing and speaking about this. And that has now given birth to four books. The fifth one is in the works right now. It'll be out next year. But four books dealing with blended families. The Smart Step Family is the core resource. Now we have a DVD curriculum that goes along with that. And then the Smart Step Mom, the Smart Step Dad, and then the Remarriage Checkup, which is really based on the largest study of strengths in remarriage relationships ever done. And so a number of good resources. And we have the largest website for blended families in the world.
Awesome. So who needs to read these books?
Well, anybody who lives in a blended family situation and anybody who supports blended families. Now, let me just stop right there for a minute, Rita, because most people kind of say, well, okay, I think I know somebody. Well, you know more than you realize. There are 100 million Americans in the United States right now with a step relationship. 100 million Americans either have a stepbrother, a stepmom, a stepson, a stepgrandchild, or a stepparent. And 150 million of us are going to have a step relationship if we don't have one now at some point in our lifetime. And so, in other words, one out of three Americans, you know, if it's not you and your family, it's somebody very, very close to you. It's very common in our day and age. And most people don't realize that. So if anybody who works in counseling situations or family support or marriage ministry or premarital counseling, anybody with that kind of audience is going to be working with blended families on a regular basis. And they need these resources to help them understand what's going on with blended families and how to help blended families work in a positive direction. Couples who are dating, let me talk to a single parent who's dating right now, and they're thinking about getting remarried. Absolutely, they need to dive into these resources so that they can anticipate well what their decisions are going to create for them and their children. Couples that are already married, living in blended family situations, whether that's both of them brought kids or only one of them brought kids, all the different configurations that are possible with blended families, they will benefit tremendously. And there's one more group that oftentimes gets left out, and that's the later life remarriage. Rita, there's a lot of people who are having 25, 30-year marriages and having their spouse die, unfortunately, of cancer or just, you know, older age. And then at the age of 65 or 75, people are getting remarried. Well, that creates a couple relationship, but it also creates now two and three generations of step relationships. And so we found that our materials are very much well received by couples in later life that are getting remarried and forming blended families.
Yeah, I've seen that too in my practice. Ron, as a step family expert, you say that second marriages have a much higher divorce rate. Help us understand why this occurs.
Well, I think essentially because there are some unique challenges to blended family marriages. There's unique stressors. Recently, I did a workshop for a bunch of therapists, and I said, you know, here's what we know. When a couple is dating, their level of satisfaction with one another before the wedding is the majority of that is based upon their dyadic relationship, that is their coupleness, if I can make a word there. What happens between them is what really drives their level of satisfaction. What happens for couples after a wedding, when one or both of them bring children into that family situation and form a blended family, is that marital satisfaction is increasingly tied to what happens with the triadic factors in the family. In other words, the parenting, the step-child relationships. Even ex-spouses figure into that. All of those external things around the couple begin to wear and tear on the couple. I can't tell you how many times I've had somebody say to me, Ron, we get along great, and then the kids come home from the other house. Or then my ex calls. Or then, you know, some other stressor that invades our couple relationship. It's one thing to become a couple. It's a total another challenge to become a family. Lots of, you know, here's another way of saying it. Lots of couples marry because they fall in love with a person, but they divorce because they don't know how to be a family. And that's what really blindsides couples, is they fell in love, they had a very positive, optimistic attitude, and then all of a sudden in comes all of these externals, and it wears and tears. And so, but the good news is the couples can manage and deal with those stressors and even, you know, utilize them in some positive ways, but they have to understand what's going on, and they have to how to make sense of it, but they also have to understand how to cope with those stressors.
Can you give us an example of some of the stressors that you're seeing?
Yeah, one of the classics is, you know, again, parenting and step-parenting. A stepchild who may be fond of their step-parent but can't quite let that step-parent into their heart, and so they kind of keep them on the outside, or maybe they give the hot and cold, and that's one of the complaints you'll hear from step-parents is, boy, I get this hot-cold thing from the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they love me, they hate me, I don't know where I stand. Well, yeah, that's part of it. The kids are having a hard time really letting you in because they feel disloyal to their other biological parent who's not in the home. And so all kinds of loyalty conflicts get in the way. And the bottom line is the step-parent wants to try to engage, needs to engage on some authoritative level just to get the socks picked up around the house, and yet that tends to lead to some conflict. Well, when that parent, or excuse me, step-parent-step-child conflict, what that does is it flows into the marriage, because then the child complains to the biological parent, hey, why aren't you defending me? Why aren't you on my side? And if that biological parent gets caught in their guilt, gets frozen, I call it paralyzed parents, they get frozen in terms of following through or discipline, or they feel sorry for all that their kid has been through,
sure.
And that paralyzes them in their response, then they have a tendency to kind of defend the child against the step-parent. Now, the step-parent's going, wait a minute, I thought you and I were a team, and am I more important to you as your spouse, or your kids more important to you? And that triadic battle can really wear and tear fast on a couple's relationship.
That's why what you're doing is so important and so necessary, Ron, because people need a roadmap. They need to be intentional and deliberate about things, but yet a lot of folks just don't know what to do.
Yeah, one of the classic issues with that is I just want everybody to be happy. You know, and what I tell couples all the time is one of the best gifts you can give yourself is a willingness to tolerate some disharmony in your home. Now, that's when they look at me and they think, and I'm paying you for this advice? And I say, yep, you are, and here's what I mean by that. As long as your need, and especially this is true for the biological parent, right? Because they would have never married somebody had they thought that it was going to bring conflict to their kids. They just wouldn't have done it because they love and care for the kids so much, and they don't want their kids to go through anymore. And so when that conflict comes, they feel like they've done the wrong thing, right? And so all of a sudden now that biological parent is highly, highly motivated to make everybody happy. So they go to their kids and they coach their kids about how the step-parent is really not a bad person and they really have their best interests at heart. And I know it's hard for you, but can't you just get along with them? And they go to the step-parent, their spouse, and they say, look, you know, take it easy on the kids. They've been through a lot, and you don't quite understand that. And so they're constantly mediating, trying to make everybody happy.
Yeah, they're playing peacemaker.
Exactly, exactly. And so one of the things I tell them is, look, you're working really hard to make everybody love one another. And here's the paradox. The more you push them in that direction, the less it's happening because they want it to. Now they feel like they're forced into caring and having affection for one another. It's so much better if you let them figure that out themselves. But in the meantime, you have to live with some of the disharmony. You have to live with somebody being anxious, with somebody feeling a little displaced. And it doesn't mean that that's, you know, I tell them the good news is, your family's not done in the journey. You're still becoming family. Just today, not everybody's happy. And so you have to just kind of find a way to empathize with one another, hear one another, give validation to, yeah, this is hard, and I get it. And sometimes you don't like the way things are. And validate that without trying to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
That paradox then relaxes you and relaxes the family a little bit. And ironically, sometimes that kind of opens up some space for people to actually find each other and begin to get along. But it's not because you made it happen. It's because they found their own way.
So what are some things a parent or step-parent should be looking for in the kids during this time of transition? Say kids have these angry or confused feelings. Maybe there's been a divorce and remarriage. What are parents needing to look for in a child who's having a hard time? I mean, sometimes people have kids that are quiet and compliant, and they may think, oh, you know, my child's handling all this fine, when really the child may be struggling.
Yeah, I think what parents need to do is just stay in tune with their kids, which means ongoing, regular dialogue. And here's another reason what I just finished talking about is important, because if, as a parent, my need is for you, my son or daughter, to fall in love with everybody else in this household now, then the kid's not going to tell you when they don't feel that. They're not going to open up. They know that they're disappointing you by saying, look, I just don't like my stepbrother. And so you have got to be a safe person for them to talk to and confide in, and then empathize with them, listen, connect into that hurt. Yeah, it is a hard transition. Yeah, I can see how difficult that is. Would it be helpful if, you know, you didn't have to share your bedroom, and maybe we can think through how to do anything that kind of empowers the child a little bit and lets them know that we're hearing you. That eases the transition. Still, there's going to be things that the parent has to say to the child. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. And I know this is hard for you, and I love you. But that's reinforcing that the child has not lost the parent
sure.
to the step-parent or to the step-siblings. It's that kind of stuff that really just kind of helps everybody get through what may be an unwanted transition for the children, but it's a necessary transition for the kids.
So you're saying the parents need to consistently be a safe haven.
That's right. That's right. And here's the step-parent's role. The step-parent's role is, if you're a step-parent, you're a grief counselor. Now, that's a role a lot of step-parents had no idea they were walking into, and it totally takes them off guard. But I say to them, look, as safe as you can be to allow for a child to have loss and be able to verbalize that, if you can anticipate that, then you're sending a message that, hey, I'm safe. I can handle your sadness. So a kid, let's do a couple of examples. You know, a child, Father's Day's rolling around or mom's birthday's rolling around. And so the stepmother says to the children, hey, look, your mom's birthday is coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure you'd love to go to the store and get her a card or a gift. Can I help with that? I'd be happy to just take you and, you know, if I could just drop you off, or if I can give you some suggestions, I'd be happy. And what that's doing is acknowledging to the child, look, you have a necessary and important commitment to your mother. Your relationship with your mother is not a threat to me. There's space, you know, in my heart for you guys to have that connection. That is good and right. There's no competition here. All of that also communicates, I am safe to you.
Yeah, I want to walk alongside. If you're ready for me to do that right now.
That's right. And again, it empowers the child to kind of let the step-parent in to whatever degree the child is open to at that season of life. And it communicates that, you know, you're worthy of respect when you do that sort of thing. Now, let me give you the tough example, okay? The tough one is when the 16-year-old stepdaughter looks to the stepmom and says, you are not my mom, and I don't have to do what you say. Now, what stepmom needs to remember? A couple of things. Number one, she is not the mother, and she does not need to try to argue her way into the child's heart. That is just, that is a dead, you're going to lose that game, okay? And embracing it and acknowledging it and then kind of firmly walking through it is the way to go. So, for example, you can have some compassion for this child and you can say, you're right, I'm not your mom. And what I hear you saying is you wish your mom were here. Yeah, I get that. That's hard for you. Your mom's not here. And I regret that for you. However, and then you set the behavioral limits. However, everybody in this house has to pick up their socks and you're not an exception. So please clean your room, and if you don't want to clean it, I'll pay your sister with your allowance to do it for you. You can decide. Now, that's just, again, it's firm. There's limits, and there's boundaries, and yet there's compassion for the fact that this child is having to deal with somebody who's not their mother, and that has to do with the past and losing mom either by death or by divorce. That kind of a stepmom is going to find that eventually she finds respect more often than not from that child. The stepmom who sabotages herself says, well, I'm not your mother, but I'm paying for everything, and you're living in my house, and you're going to do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
So just get a smile on your face and let's go. That sort of sarcasm and, you know, insecure, you're going to love me whether you like it or not sort of a posture is just
a dead end. Yeah,
it's a dead end.
It's a hard startup versus a soft startup, and that can
exactly.
kill it. Yeah.
Exactly. And now that says to the child, hey, this person is not safe. She's not capable of handling my loss or my sadness or my frustration with life. And I'm against her and she's against me. And now we've both dug in our heels. See, step-parents got to remember something. Biological parents have an emotional attachment with their children from the day those kids are born. You're my mom or you're my dad, and that affords you a lot of things. And one of the things it affords you over time is grace in conflict. Kids will forgive a biological parent for something, even if that parent doesn't deserve it. That's why children who have a dad who drops out of their life will constantly look for that dad to come back into their life and make provision for that person to come back into their life. They have grace for them. But step-parents, you don't get that in the beginning. You get quick judgment. And a child who determines quickly that you are not safe, you cannot be trusted with my pain or my outbursts or my my confusion about you, they'll decide you are untrustworthy and they'll never let you in. Those early days are really, really important to the long-term possibilities between a step-parent and step-child.
So step-parents really need to understand the limits of their role.
Understanding those limits and respecting those limits is very, very significant. And in effect, it says to the children, I care for you, and I'm trying to find my place into your life, but I'm not going to force myself in. And that allows the child and the adult to get along and get to know each other. We don't force ourselves on any adult relationship into somebody else's heart. Why in the world do we think we could force our way into a child's heart?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense, you know, but yet sometimes we do it.
So some kids adjust well to having a stepdad or mom and others don't. What factors affect the bond, do you think?
Well, there's a number of things that the step-parent can control, and there's a few things they cannot. Those are the ones that create frustration for step-parents. For example, the age of the child. Children who are really young tend to bond very quickly to new people. Children between the ages of 10 to 15 tend to bond far more slowly. And actually, that's a very awkward time. It's the worst time to try to be connecting and building a relationship with a stepchild compared to children ages 3, 4, or 5 years old or younger, bond very quickly. Some children personalities will drive this as well. You know, some kids are extroverts, and they love new people and new things, and they're adventurers, and, you know, they're always connecting to the outside world. And other children are introverts. They need one friend, and you ain't it. And, you know, that's a bit of a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
They just don't need another person in their life in any, you know, formal sense. So those things make a difference. Now, here are the things that step-parents can control, okay? Remember earlier I was talking about how attachment, either for biological parents, gives you grace, but attachment with step-parents is very, very low, and so you have to build respect over time. Same thing's true of your personality. If you have some rough edges to your personality, I tell step-parents, if you have a temper, if you're quick and harsh sometimes, judgmental on occasions, if you're kind of controlling, you know, you better know that about yourself, and you better really round off those rough edges, or that's going to work against you while this child is trying to determine whether you're safe, whether they can trust you, whether they're going to choose to love you, and how much they're going to love you. You know, if you give them reason to not like you, they're not going to like you.
Yeah, the odds are stacked against you going into the thing, so you
exactly.
really need to notice.
You've got to know that about yourself and really temper that part of you. Those kinds of things really make a difference. And the other one that step-parents also do not get to control that affects the rate of bonding is the biological parent in the other home. Now, I'm assuming that this is not a death situation, a parent has died, but a divorce situation. And so let's say your stepdad and biological dad in the other home is telling the kids, you don't have to listen to him. I'm your dad. He's not. Well, that sort of posturing really wears and pulls on the kids' loyalties, and they will, most of the time, they will honor that.
Mm.
And they will not get along or be kind to the stepdad.
You have an entire chapter that focuses on adult stepkids. That's a huge issue. I know I see that. I have friends that are dealing with that. Why is that an important subject?
In both the Smart Stepmom book and the Smart Stepdad book, yes, we have a whole chapter on adult stepfamilies, if you will, later life stepfamilies, sometimes they're called. It's very important because, again, most adult couples who are getting married later in life who have kids that are out of the house, they're empty nest, they assume their children will be fine. That, hey, because they're not living at home, there's not going to be many adjustments. That is just not true. It's just not true. I believe that adult stepchildren have just as many transitional issues as biological children that are living in the home. The difference is you're not dealing with authority. And you're not trying to, you know, run their life and govern their life. They may be in college. They may be adults with their own families. They may live close. They may live far away. But they still got to figure out how to do Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
They still got to figure out how to call home and have somebody else answer the phone. And that's a totally new person in their world and in their life who is taking mom or dad's time and energy. And that's meaning that dad's not being the grandparent to my kids like I kind of envisioned that he would be, because now he's investing with his new wife, whom I don't even know. I'm coaching a couple right now that are considering getting engaged. When they called, they were ready to get engaged and get married pretty quickly. I was able to get them to slow down and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, he has some adult children who seem to be pretty fine with the whole dad dating thing, but she has two daughters that are adults, young adults, and they are not fine with it. And so we have had to slow down the dating process so that they can very wisely be moving towards the kids, engaging in a series of conversations about the possibilities of the future in order to hear the children, in order to validate their relationship with their mother and how important that is to mom, and at the same time to introduce the possibilities that things might be changing. And every time they get closer to, you can tell there's a little more intimacy in the couple's relationship. Her girls just begin to just well up in tears and react and just feel like they're losing their mom. Their biological dad is deceased. It feels again like they're losing their dad.
Yeah, another loss.
It resurrects all that sadness and pain over losing dad. And now the family identity is changing. If mom gets remarried, we're going to go to Thanksgiving and have 15 other people there that we don't even know. And what's that mean for us and our life and our family? So it's loss after loss after loss after loss when it comes to children. And that's true whether they're 35 or whether they're 13.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I see that all the time. So slow it down, basically, for these folks. Don't
for
be
people
so...
people who are dating,
yeah.
Slow it down. Slow it down. I've got a good friend who is kind of rule of thumb. I like Jeff Barziel says, if you're ready to marry as a couple, your kids are at least a year behind you.
Wow.
Now, that's a good rule of thumb. Now, nobody should punch on a calendar 1 year and then get married. But the point is, kids work on a different trajectory, a different timeline than the adults. And if you're going to be respectful towards that, and by the way, I'm not saying the kids get to determine when you get married. What I'm saying is, you are stupid if you don't pay attention to that. You're unwise if you don't consider that in the timing and the pacing of your relationship. Because if you move rapidly, if you ignore them, they will feel left out, left behind, and they will not embrace your marriage. Then you've got a lifetime of heartache going on in your home. Better to slow down and consider them so that the transition to the blended family experience is more smooth.
Very wise words, my friend. We're out of time today. How can people get more information on Smart Step Families?
SmartStepFamilies.com is our website. Over 250 articles that are free. How about
wow,
that?
Free.
We have a free e-magazine that goes out 6 times a year. People can sign up for with articles and tips and tools and suggestions. And, you know, we're just more than happy for people to find us. Of course, we have a Facebook page as well. But SmartStepFamilies.com is the place to go.
Great. And remember, any of Ron's books can be purchased on my website as well at siftedaswheat.com under the Heartline podcast link. Ron, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. It was a blessing to talk to you. You're a wise man, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you very much.
God bless. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.